Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Frank Sinatra once sang, "Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars." Well, Frank never made it to the moon. He never made it to space for that matter either. But our next guest has. He's spent 6 months of his life living on the International Space Station amongst a whole range of other pursuits in the great galaxies. Jeff Williams is his name. He's a career astronaut with NASA, and he joins us on Open House now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheridan. It's good to be with you.
You know, the cliche is that every little boy dreams of becoming an astronaut. I'd love to know from you, did you want to become an astronaut as a boy?
Well, I actually grew up on a farm in northern Wisconsin and with pretty simple life and outside of a small town. And I have to admit that as a child, I never dreamed I would have that opportunity. So I did not aspire as a child. It was later on as I went off to the military academy and joined the U.S. Army, I became aware of the opportunity, and that's when I set it as a goal.
Mm. So you first joined the military. Uh-huh. At what point, though, did you actually say, right, I think this could be something I could shoot for? What was the catalyst?
Well, I read the book in the 1970s by Tom Wolfe called The Right Stuff, and in that book he chronicled the early test pilots in America, as well as the first astronauts in the beginning of the human space program. I was a cadet at West Point at the time. At that point, I aspired to do just that, become a pilot, become a test pilot, and eventually an astronaut. And I started applying to NASA in 1987 and did not get selected until 1996. So that's a little lesson in perseverance.
Yes, absolutely. So that's the general career progression, is it? You actually become a pilot, a fighter pilot, and then you can move on to perhaps think about space?
Well, not everybody progresses along that line, but many of us have, where we've, especially the military guys, go into aviation, become pilots, become experimental test pilots, and then that historically has made folks pretty competitive to compete for the astronaut selection.
Yes. How did you feel the moment when you realized, okay, I'm actually going to be jumping on to the next mission?
Well, it's a pretty exciting time, actually. You know well ahead of time. And I spent 3.5 years training for that last flight, going back and forth primarily between Russia and Houston. So it's a long period of time. You don't spend a lot of. It's not a surprise when you get ready to go. You know you're going to go. You prepared for years. You work pretty hard getting there. But when the day finally comes, it is a big day. And in the case of a long flight to the space station, in our case, about 6 months, it's a different kind of feeling when you walk to the launch pad than going on a space shuttle for 2 weeks or less. Because you know you're not coming back to the planet for a long time to be with your family.
Jeff, run us through some of the preparations that you go through before you go on a mission.
Well, you know, in our house, if something breaks, we call a repairman. We might call a plumber, electrician, or whatnot. Or if we get sick, we go to the doctor. We can't do any of that up there, so we have to train across the spectrum of things that might come up. Obviously, all the things we plan to do, we train for. That's operating the spacecraft, the Soyuz spacecraft, in our case, to get there. If you go on the space shuttle, you train to operate the space shuttle. When you get to the space station, it's a very massive spacecraft, so you learn how to operate that. You learn how to deal with when things go wrong or you have an emergency. You train for spacewalks. You train for the repairs that I mentioned. You get medical training so you can deal with a medical emergency or an ailment or something on board. And that just is a kind of the tip of the iceberg. It goes on and on and on, and that's why it takes years of preparation.
Yeah.
One other topic that people don't think about is foreign language. We all learn Russian, so we're taking Russian full-time, and the Russians are taking English full-time.
Right. Okay, so you can communicate to what really are the two major countries operating the space programs.
Right. It is an international partnership with the European Space Agency, Canada, and Japan as well. But the two languages primarily used on the space station are English and Russian.
Okay. This is Open House. We're talking to Jeff Williams, a career astronaut with NASA. Fascinating discussion. Jeff, your first space mission was in 2000 on the shuttle Atlantis. I understand you were involved in the construction of the International Space Station. What is the point of that International Space Station? And what was it like actually constructing it?
Well, it's fascinating, of course, to be in the construction project of a facility like that. It is a massive facility, probably the greatest undertaking in the history of humankind. And it's a laboratory, is what it's designed to be, a laboratory that provides a very unique environment, weightlessness, to study science and do research across the spectrum of the different disciplines. It's also teaching us, and I think this is probably the most important part of it, it's teaching us how to work and live and operate in space over a long period of time so that we can learn how to do that and go back to the moon for a long duration and eventually send crews onto Mars.
And you really see that, say, life in space for everyday people could actually be a reality in the future?
Well, I think hypothetically, way off in the future, it could be very commonplace. But we have to have there'll have to be a broad economic reason, I think, that will drive people there. Just like if you look at the history of humankind and people's traveling and discovering different parts of the world, of course, the history of the discovery of the West and the colonization and growing of nations in the West would be an example of that. And there was economic reasons that kind of drove that and other reasons that drove that. And if something materializes in space that's equivalent to that, I'm sure that it'll be more common in the future.
Well, I can see that space travel itself could well be an economic venture. Of course, it'd be incredibly expensive, but apart from that, would there be any other economic benefit from being in space?
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. There has been talk about a substance on the moon that might be mined. Helium-3 is one of them that they talk about it, which is a potential energy source. I don't know if that'll materialize or not, but I guess we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. So tell me about a day in the life of an astronaut living on the International Space Station. You were there for 6 months. What do you do in the morning to night? Well, first question, is there such a thing as morning and night? You actually are orbiting, aren't you?
Yeah, you're orbiting the Earth. You go around the Earth every 90 minutes. So that's 16 times a day you see a sunrise and a sunset. So there's no day-night or darkness and light kind of day cycle that we know here on the planet. But we do work on a 24-hour schedule, and the schedule is planned by the ground team. And we'll get up. We worked on Greenwich Mean Time, and we typically woke up at 6 in the morning and worked a regular day with 3 meals scheduled during the day, had our quote-unquote evening time, if you will, to relax a little bit, and then we were generally going to sleep about 10 o'clock at night. So it was generally a 24-hour day. There is no routine in space. Every day is a little bit unique. Some days we're doing routine kinds of stuff, maybe conducting experiments, doing some repairs on the space station or maintenance of the components of the space station. Other days are very unique in that we may go out and do a spacewalk, and we spend, for example, a couple weeks in preparing the suits and the tools and the procedures to go out and spend 6 hours or 7 hours outside the space station doing work out there.
Yes, well, you've done a few of those, and on that first mission back in 2000, that was your first spacewalk, I believe, and it was 7 hours, is that right?
Yes, it was just shy of 7 hours in 2000. It was an early assembly spacewalk on the International Space Station to support the assembly before the first permanent crew got there. It was in preparation for the first expedition to the space station. Of course, my second flight was on an expedition to the space station. Yes. So it was good to go back to the facility that I was honored to be a part of the early assembly of.
What is the experience of floating in space with, I understand, basically a rope to hold you back to whatever it is that you're departing from, your space shuttle, or in this case, actually, the International Space Station itself? What is that experience like?
Oh, floating in space is incredible. It's a lot of fun, obviously. You've probably seen videos of astronauts doing somersaults and whatnot in space, and that's always a lot of fun. It's also, it brings some challenges because, you know, for example, if we're working at a desk and we have a pen and paper and our telephone sitting on our desk and a pair of glasses or whatever is on our desk, it's going to sit there and behave very nice on the desk when we put it down. It doesn't work that way in space. Things float away. So we can use Velcro and other things to restrain things. We also work in three dimensions. You know, we can work up on the ceiling or on a wall or on the floor, and it takes a few days to kind of adapt to that and get used to it. But after a while, it becomes a very natural environment to work in. But a lot of fun. Incredible views out the window, of course, to view God's creation below.
Yeah.
In all the details of the surface of the Earth.
Yeah. This is Open House. We are talking to Jeff Williams, a NASA astronaut. Fascinating discussion. We'll podcast this via the openhouse.net.au. Tell me what it is like, Jeff, to look out the window and see Earth. See it as a little ball.
Well, even after 6 months, you never get tired of viewing the details of the Earth. Of course, you know, that is home to us, and so we can always see home out the window. And we see it, as you said, as a ball, as the planet. And there's just a never-ending list of details that you can see in the atmosphere, the weather in the atmosphere, the cloud formations in the daytime, the lightning storms in the nighttime, the mountains, the other terrain features, rivers, lakes, oceans, and glaciers. Sand dunes, massive, desert sand dunes, and other details. It's just you never get tired of doing it, and it's just a beautiful planet. You can tell there's life on this planet when you look at it from space.
Are there any other signs of anything else you can see on Earth? It was said that when the horrific bomb of Hiroshima actually went up, it could be seen from space. Are there any things that you can notice from space that we normally wouldn't be able to see?
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, forest fires are very easily seen. You see the plume of smoke. There was one day back in May, I guess it was, of 2006, we were flying over the Aleutian Islands off the coast of Alaska, and we saw a volcano that had just started erupting because the plume was not too high above the mountain itself, and the eruption lasted maybe 20 minutes or so, because the next time we came around, an hour and a half later, it was done. You could see that. You can see cities. You can see airports, especially the bigger airports. Long, linear-shaped features on the surface of the Earth are very easy to see. There's some fascinating terrain in the continent of Australia, especially in the western part of Australia. Mm. It almost looks like another planet, just very unique terrain features in the middle part of your continent.
Yeah. It'd be very easy to get distracted from your work, wouldn't it?
yes, it is very easy. You got to stay focused on the work to get the work done.
I bet you.
But the ground is tracking that, so they crack the whip and we make sure we get it done.
I bet they do. Jeff, how has all of this experience changed your worldview? I mean, when we use that phrase, we often think about the philosophical understandings of the world or a spiritual understanding of the world. For you, it can actually be literal. How has it changed your view of the universe in its entirety?
Well, when you see the Earth from orbit, it's a very humbling experience in that regard. I mean, I think we all have an awareness of just how big the world is and then how big the universe is. You know, it goes basically without end because we can see as far as we can see using instruments like the Hubble Space Telescope and others, but we know that there's universe even beyond that. So it's infinite in the terms of how we can view it. And you gain an appreciation for that, I think, on orbit. People always ask me if it changed my faith. And I perhaps disappoint people and when I say, no, it didn't really change my faith. It does enhance a lot of the reality of the natural world, and it enhances what we know of in terms of God's creation and His person as creator. But it doesn't change the content of the faith, because we get that from the supernatural revelation found in the Word of God.
Yes.
So experiences are viewed through the truth found in the Scriptures. So in that sense, it doesn't change your faith. It gives you new perspectives, of course.
Yes.
Yes. But it doesn't change the content.
Fully grasp what you're saying. It must be very interesting, though, to read some of those wonderful passages in the Bible while you're actually up in space. You know, the heavens declare the glory of God, etc.
Oh, absolutely. And you're talking about Psalm 19, and Psalm 19 was you know, on my mind continually up there. Psalm 8 touches on creation and the humility of that we can feel when we consider God and as creator in his creation. Job 26 is a wonderful passage in there that says he hangs the earth on nothing. And, when you're going around the earth 16 times a day, I can tell you that there are no strings attached. It's true. He hung the earth on nothing. And it talks about just the marvel of considering the creator there in Job 26 in that context.
Yes. Do you feel small, and do you feel that God is big out there?
Like I said, it's a humbling experience. So I think that you do feel small in that regard when you see the grandeur of the earth and out into the star field at night, which I didn't mention before, but you can see an order of magnitude more stars when it's dark outside the spacecraft and inside the spacecraft. And it just intensifies those verses. You know, when we read those verses, like you mentioned, the Psalm 19 and Psalm 8 and Job 26 and others, it talks about the grandeur of creation and how it reflects the reality of the Creator and the nature of the Creator. And all of the experiences in space, viewing it from orbit, viewing the Earth from orbit specifically, just intensify those great truths.
Yes. At one stage, you were going to do a satellite hookup to your church and actually experience a church service from space. Did that ever end up happening?
It did happen, and it was just a treat during the 6 months to be able to do that, because 6 months is a long time. You miss a lot of things, and one of the things you miss is the fellowship in the local church. I know it meant a lot to the congregation to have that hookup. It was a telephone hookup where I participated with the service and then listened to part of the sermon. But it was a great treat for me to do that, too, and it really was a good encouragement for me to do that and be part of the fellowship that I know here on the ground.
Yeah. Jeff Williams is a NASA astronaut. He's our guest on Open House tonight. Theopenhouse.net.au will carry the podcast. Very few of us will ever forget the day that the Space Shuttle Columbia exploded, and we've had other experiences like that in the past as well. As an astronaut, how does that affect you approaching the day of launch?
Well, even without that, we all know what we're getting into. We all know the risks and understand the risks. Of course, when we have an incident like that, and especially lose friends in such a tragic way and see the impacts on their families with all that, it makes all of that even more real. But we all believe in what we do. We believe it's important. It transcends us personally. And I think that it makes most of us even more determined to move on and continue to conduct human exploration of space so that their sacrifice was not in vain.
Mm. Were you friends with many of those members on Columbia?
I was friends with all of them, with the exception of the Israeli astronaut, who I did not get to know very well because he was only here for that year and a half or so prior to launch, and he was busy training. I was busy training and doing my work, and so I didn't get to know him. But the rest of them were all close friends.
Yeah, and your family, Jeff, how does your wife feel about you going up on what must be one of the most dangerous forms of transport known to man?
Well, thank you for asking. In my mind, she is the hero in all this. She's been such a great wife and such an inspiration to me. She's been so supportive in that. I mean, she understands this. When we met, I was on a skydiving team, and if we spent time together, it was usually on the weekend at the drop zone. She had to come out and hang out while I did my skydiving training. And then, of course, flying my entire life and some of the things that associated with military flight and experimental test flight. and now this. And she's been very supportive. It has not been easy for her. It's obviously it brings a lot of stress. I don't know how she does it. If the situation was reversed, I don't think I could endure it the way she has, endure the pressure, because it's out of her control. You know, it's me going off to do my thing, and she has no control over the outcome personally. But she has confidence, of course, in the team of folks that put the rocket together and operate it, and the entire ops team. So, so anyway, my hat's off to her. She's my hero.
I bet she'd be exercising her faith as launch day approaches.
Very much so, and she's got a strong faith, and that's one of the primary ways she inspires me. I call her my Proverbs 31 bride. Mm-hmm.
The noble woman. When's your next mission, Jeff? When are you scheduled to launch off again?
Well, I'm not formally scheduled yet, but I expect I will go back again, and probably within the next 18 months or so. And it looks like very likely I'll go back for another 6 months. I think that'll be my last long flight, though. When I came back from this last one, both my wife and I, we assumed that was going to be it. I wasn't going to fly again. And she says it's sort of like labor. You don't want to go through it again as a mother immediately afterwards, but you kind of warm up to the idea with a passage of time. And right. I think the same thing happened to us after this last flight.
You're right. Okay. I have heard that many of those people who have actually been to the moon, and I don't know necessarily about space travel in general, but those people have actually stepped foot on the moon, a lot of them have really struggled afterwards in their lives because, well, you've done that. What do you do after that? Is there any kind of post-space travel counseling that astronauts need to go through to kind of readjust into everyday life afterwards?
Certainly we have resources available to help us in that. I don't know. I've heard those stories too. I don't know. I'm sure there's some truth to them. I don't know specific examples. But like anything in life, if you have big goals and you achieve those goals, if your whole meaning in life is resting on that, once you achieve it and you get on the other side of it, then yeah, it would have the potential to put you in a place where you say, okay, now what do I do? Because everything you hung meaning on was on that achievement. But I think life is bigger than that. You know, to me, this is, I don't mean to understate it, but it's just a job. You mentioned the word vocation earlier. Mm. It's my vocation, my calling, and I'm called to just go off and do the best I can to do it, but it's not what the whole meaning of life hangs on.
Yes.
The meaning of life is understanding yourself as a child of God and what He has done for you. That's what I believe, what He has done by His grace for us in Jesus Christ. Specifically, the achievement of goals is just our response to that in the vocation that He's given us in life.
Yes, and that essential identity as a child of God can never be taken away, no matter what career paths or career changes we have. Jeff, it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for your time on the show tonight.
You bet, Sheridan. It was my pleasure.
Yeah. NASA astronaut Jeff Williams there, who was aboard the Atlantis mission that docked at the International Space Station for half a year in 2006. An amazing story, wasn't it? If you missed it, theopenhouse.net.au will carry the podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.